Chapter 11. India. The monsoons that sweep across India from the Arabian Sea drop most of their rain on the mountain range known as the Western Ghats. By the time the moist air currents reach the Deccan in southeast India, the downpour has diminished to a mere 25 inches. As Professor Arthur Irwin stood in the mouth of the cave, looking out at the sheets of water pouring down from the slate-colored sky, he found it hard to believe this was supposedly the same amount of rainfall London gets. The afternoon shower that was just ending would by itself have been enough to float the Houses of Parliament. The cave opening was on a sloping hillside that overlooked a narrow valley choked by lush greenery. The dense forest south of the Ganges River is the most ancient part of India, and was once known as a remote and dangerous place haunted by demons. Irwin was less worried about demons than the welfare and whereabouts of his party. It had been 6 hours since Professor Mehta had set off for the village with their taciturn guide. The village was about an hour's hike along a muddy road and across a stream. He hoped the bridge hadn't been knocked out in a sudden flash flood. He sighed. Nothing he could do about it. He would simply have to wait. He had plenty of supplies and much to occupy himself. Irwin went back into the cave, walking between a pair of pillars under a horseshoe arch into the cool central hall or chapel. Poor Mehta. This was his expedition, after all. He'd been so excited when he called and said, "I need a middle-aged Cantabrian ethnologist for a small expedition. Can you come to India? At my expense."
"Has the Indian Museum suddenly become less parsimonious?"
"No, but it's not the museum. I'll explain later." The Buddhist monks who had carved the cave from sheer rock with pick and axe were following the words of the master, who advised his followers to take a rain rest for meditation and study during the monsoon season. Doorways on either side of the chapel opened into the Spartan monk cells. The stone couches where Irwin and the other men spread their sleeping bags were not the most comfortable of sleeping platforms, but at least they were dry. The main hall was built like a Christian basilica. Light from the door reached the far end where the altar would be in a church. Irwin marveled at the artfully sculpted pillars that supported the barrel ceiling. Along the walls were scenes from the life of Buddha, and, most interesting to Irwin, court and domestic paintings that portrayed the everyday existence of people and allowed the cave to be dated at about AD 500. The Deccan was famous for its cave monasteries, and as far as anyone knew, all had been discovered. Then this one was found, its entrance hidden behind vegetation. On their first visit, Mehta and Irwin were examining the paintings when the guide, who had wandered off, called out to them from the anteroom. "Come quickly! A man!" They exchanged glances, thinking that the guide had discovered a skeleton. When they entered the cool, dark space and flashed their lights on the corner, they saw a stone figure perhaps 5 feet long. The man reclined, his head turned to one side. On his belly he held a dish-shaped receptacle. Irwin stared for a moment in disbelief, then went back into the chapel and sat down. Mehta followed him out.
"What is it, Arthur?"
"That figure. Have you ever seen anything like that?"
"No, but obviously you have."
Irwin tugged nervously at his goatee.
"I was traveling in Mexico some years ago. We stopped at the Mayan ruins at Chichen Itza. There's a larger version of this figure there. It's called a chacmool. That dish-like receptacle the figure is holding was used to catch blood during sacrifices."
"Mexico," Mehta said without conviction.
Irwin nodded.
"When I saw it here, it was so out of time and place."
"I understand, of course, but perhaps you're mistaken. There are a great many similarities in cultures."
"Maybe, We've got to get it back for authentication.
Maeta's sad eyes became even sadder.
We haven't even started our work.
There's no reason why we can't still do it. But this is important.
Of course, Arthur, Maeta said with resignation, remembering how impulsive Irwin was even when they were students at Cambridge.
They trekked back to the village and retrieved their truck, which they drove to the nearest town that had a telephone. Maeta suggested they call TimeQuest, the non-profit foundation that was funding the original expedition, and ask for more money to pay to remove the artifact. He explained that the only strings attached were that TimeQuest be notified of any significant find. After a lengthy conversation, Maeta hung up and smiled.
They said we can hire some villagers, but to wait until they get someone to us with the money. I told them the monsoon season is almost here. They said 48 hours.
They went back to the cave and worked at the site, photographing and cataloguing. 2 days later, Maeta and the guide set off for the village to meet the TimeQuest representative. Then the rains came. Irwin worked on his notes. When the others hadn't arrived by dusk, he cooked curried rice and beans. It grew dark, and it looked as if he would be spending the night alone. So he was pleased when he heard a quiet footfall as he finished washing the dishes with spring water from a cistern.
"At last, my friends," he said over his shoulder. "I'm afraid you've missed dinner, but I might be persuaded to cook more rice."
There was no reply. He turned and saw a figure standing just out of range of the light cast by the lamp. Thinking he might be a villager sent by Maeta, Irwin asked,
"You startled me. Did Maeta send you with a message?"
In silent reply, the figure took a step forward. Metal gleamed in the stranger's hand, and in the last terrifying moments of his life, Irwin realized what had happened to Maeta and the guide, even if he didn't know why.